ham was terrible, she confesses. The wistful note in her voice tells me she misses him. A lot. Does he come home often? I think of Gideon, who's home after only 2 weeks of college. No. He doesn't have a car, so we won't see each other until Thanksgiving. That's when his mom will drive up. I'm going with her. She nearly skips with excitement at the mention of the trip. But someday he'll have one. Is he your boyfriend? Yeah. She looks at me in accusation. Why, you got a problem with that? I hold up my hands in surrender. Of course not. I was just curious. She nods and opens the door to a small room with a neatly made bed and a normal-sized television. So how are the royals at home? She asks as she sets up the game. Nice, I lie. Really? She looks skeptical. Because they haven't been nice to you, or about you. Some misplaced sense of loyalty to those jerks makes me shut her down. Nah, they're coming around. I echo Callum's earlier words, but they don't sound any more believable from my mouth. Trying to change the subject, I tap the television. Ready to dance? Yep. Valerie accepts my topic switch with ease. She grabs 2 wine coolers from a mini-fridge and hands me one. Here's to hiding and still having fun. The game is a breeze. It's way too easy for both of us. Valerie is a great dancer. But I grew up in this environment, and there's no shift of the hips or flip of the arm that I can't make. Valerie decides we need handicaps, and so she pauses the game, and we start chugging our wine coolers. As we drink, her moves become increasingly terrible, but the alcohol is like magic for me, and the music just takes over. Damn, girl, you've got moves, she teases. You should try out for one of those TV dance shows. Nope. I take another swig of my drink. I've got no interest in being on television. Well, you should. I mean, look at you. You're hot even in that rich biatch getup you're rocking, and with those moves, you'd be a star. Not interested, I say again. She laughs. Fine, be that way. Gotta pee. I laugh, too, as she bounds away from the screen mid-song to use the bathroom. She's got a crazy amount of energy, and I like her. I make a mental note to ask her if she goes to Astor Park Prep, too. It'd be nice to have a friend there when I start on Monday. But then the song on the screen changes, and the music pulls me in again. While Valerie is in the bathroom, the Divinals' Touch Myself starts playing, and I start dancing, not to the game, but my own moves, a slick, sultry dance, one that makes my blood pound and my hands grow sweaty. The unwelcome image of Reed's hot body and blue eyes appears in front of me. Damn it, the asshole royal has invaded my thoughts, and I'm helpless to shut him out. I close my eyes and imagine his hands running along my hips and wrenching me close. It's his leg thrust between mine. The lights turn on, and I stop abruptly. Where is he? The devil himself demands. Who? I ask dumbly. I can't believe I was fantasizing about Reed Royal, the guy who thinks I'm screwing his father. The meathead you're dancing for. Reed crosses the room and grabs my upper arms. I told you that you can't turn tricks with my friends. There's no one here. My drunk mind is too slow to catch on to what he's saying. The toilet flushes. Oh, yeah? He flings me away and yanks open the bathroom door. A squeal of dismay rings out, and he bites out an apology as he slams the door shut. I can't help the smug smile from forming. Did I mention I was a lesbian? He doesn't think I'm funny. Why didn't you tell me you were with Valerie? Because it's funnier watching you jump to conclusions. And even if I told you who I was with, you wouldn't have believed me. You've already decided who and what I am, and nothing is going to change that. He scowls, but doesn't contradict me. Come with me. Let me think on that. I tap a finger against my bottom lip, as if I'm really contemplating his crappily delivered invitation. His eyes drop to watch the movement. Okay, I've decided. No. You don't like it here. he says flatly. Thank you, Mr. Perceptive. He ignores the sarcasm.
Yeah, well, I don't like it either. But here's the deal. If you don't come with me and make a fucking effort, then my father will keep forcing you to go to these parties. But if you get your ass out there and everyone reports back to their parents that they saw you, then Dad will lay off. Got it?
Not really. Reed moves closer again, and I'm once again floored by the size of him. He's so tall. Tall enough that if he were skinny, his nickname would be Beanpole or something. But he's not skinny. He's built. He's big and muscular, and the alcohol is making me feel all hot and achy around him. He's still talking, oblivious to my inappropriate train of thought.
If my dad thinks you're a lost, lonely lamb, he'll keep pushing us all together. Or maybe that's what you want. Is that it? You want to be seen with us? You want to be at these parties?
The accusations snap me out of my haze. Because I've spent so much time around you tonight. His expression doesn't change, not even to acknowledge that I'm right. Whatever, fine. Come on, Valerie, let's go party, I call out. I can't. I'm mortified. Reed Royal saw me in the bathroom, she moans through the door. The asshole is gone. Besides, you're probably the most attractive and decent thing he's seen tonight. Reed rolls his eyes, but leaves as I motion him out the door. Valerie finally comes out. Why are we leaving our little haven? To see and be seen? I answer honestly. Ugh, sounds terrible.
I never said it wasn't.
Chapter 9. The first person I see when Valerie and I enter the living room is Savannah Montgomery. She's wearing tight jeans that are ripped at the knees, and a halter top that bares her midriff. Her eyes are glued to Gideon, whose back is turned, as he leans against the wall, chatting with another guy. As if she can see me making a mental connection between her and Gideon, Savannah swivels her head toward me. She doesn't wave or say hello, but her eyes meet mine briefly before she turns to talk to her friend. The music is blaring, and everyone is drinking or dancing or making out in various corners of the room. Beyond the French doors, I glimpse a large kidney-shaped pool, its bluish light casting shadows on the faces of the teenagers standing around it. There are people everywhere. It's loud and hot, and I already miss the quiet safety of the staff quarters.
Do we really have to be here? Valerie murmurs.
I catch Reed watching us from the oak bar across the room. He's with Easton, and they both nod in warning when I meet their gaze.
Yeah, we do.
She looks resigned.
Fine. Then we might as well get the bullshit out of the way.
Valerie is a godsend. She links her arm through mine and takes me around the party, introducing me to random people, then whispering details in my ear.
That chick, Claire? She's screwing Easton Royal. She likes telling people she's his girlfriend, but everyone knows Easton doesn't do girlfriends. Thomas, raging cokehead. But Daddy's a senator, so Thomas's messes are always cleaned up.
Definitely stay away from Derek. Chlamydia Central over there.
I swallow a choked laugh as she guides me toward another group. A trio of girls in assorted pastel mini-dresses.
Lydia, Ginny, Francine, this is Ella.
Valerie waves a hand between us, then leads me away from the pastels before they can even open their mouths.
You ever wonder if some people are born without brains? She asks me. Proof of it right there. Girls give new meaning to the word airhead.
I'm not gonna lie. I'm enjoying the introductions, or rather, the gossip that comes with them. I do notice that nobody says much more than a muttered hello to me before shifting their gazes to the Royal Brothers to check their reactions.
All right, easy part is over, Valerie says with a sigh. It's time to slay the dragon.
The dragon?
My cousin, a.k.a. the queen bee of Astor Park Prep. Be warned. She's crazy possessive about the royals. I'm pretty sure she's hooked up with all of them, even the twins.
Speaking of the twins, we pass Sawyer on our way to the pool area. I know it's Sawyer because he's wearing a black t-shirt, and earlier I heard Gideon call the white t-shirt-wearing twins Sebastian. A petite redhead is draped around Sawyer, trailing kisses along his neck, but his gaze stays fixed on me as we walk past.
Little Royal's girlfriend, Valerie tells me. Lauren, or Laura, something like that. Sorry, I'm not knowledgeable about the sophomore circles.
But she's knowledgeable about almost everyone else, it seems. For a girl who likes to hide in the corner, Valerie is a bottomless well of gossip. But I guess that's the best way to gather information, watching from the shadows.
Brace yourself, she warns. The claws might come out.
The claws in question belong to a gorgeous brunette in a silky green dress that barely covers her thighs. She's draped on a plush lounge chair like she's Cleopatra or some shit. Her friends take up similar poses, each one in similarly skimpy dresses. The hairs on the back of my neck stand on end, and I turn my head to find Reed and Easton sliding through the French doors. Reed's eyes lock with mine. His tongue comes out briefly to moisten his bottom lip, and my heart does an irritating flip. I hate this guy. He's too attractive for his own good.
Jordan? Valerie greets her cousin. Awesome party as always.
The brunette smirks. I'm surprised to see you out and about, Val. Don't you usually like to cower in the attic?
I decided to live on the edge tonight.
Jordan studies her cousin's flushed cheeks.
I see you have. Drunk much?
Valerie rolls her eyes, then tugs me forward. This is Ella. Ella, Jordan. She points a finger at each of the other girls and rattles off names. Shay, Rachel, Abby. Only one of the friends spares me a look.
Shay. You met my sister earlier? She says coolly.
Savannah.
I nod.
Yeah.
Cool chick.
Shay narrows her eyes. I think she's trying to figure out if I'm being sarcastic or not. Jordan speaks up, her almond brown eyes gleaming.
So, Ella, Callum Royal is your new daddy, huh?
I notice the entire backyard has grown silent. Even the music pouring out of the living room seems to have quieted. I feel everyone's eyes on us. No, on Jordan. Her friends' expressions are almost gleeful. I brace myself for an attack because obviously that's where this is leading. Jordan sits up and crosses her long legs seductively.
What's it like, sucking old man cock? She asks.
Someone snorts. A few titters tickle my back. My throat tightens with embarrassment. These people are laughing at me. I realize the Royals had gotten to their friends, probably long before I showed up. Nobody here ever planned on giving me a real chance. I'm horrified to feel tears stinging my eyes. No. Screw that. Screw Jordan and screw all of them. I might not come from a family who deals in hotels, but I'm better than this bitch. I've survived more than she ever could. I blink, pasting on an indifferent expression. Your dad's not bad, if that's what you're asking, but I find it super creepy that he wants to pull my hair and have me call him Daddy. Is everything okay at home? Valerie snickers. A shocked gasp comes from one of Jordan's friends. Jordan's eyes blaze for one brief moment before the mocking glint returns, and she lets out a husky laugh.
You were right,
she calls out to someone behind me.
She's trash.
I don't need to turn around to know she's talking to Reed. Beside me, Valerie's features tighten. You're a real bitch, you know that? She tells her cousin.
Better a bitch than a casual,
Jordan answers with a grin. Then she waves a hand at us.
Get out of my sight. I'm trying to enjoy my party.
We've been dismissed. Valerie turns on her heel and I follow. But when we reach the doors, I veer away from her and march up to Reed. His blue eyes reveal nothing, but his jaw twitches slightly when he sees me. There,
I've done my royal duty. I mutter to him, come find me when it's time to go. I brush past him without looking back. It's after 1 a.m. when we leave the party. Easton finds me in Valerie's room upstairs, the two of us sprawled on her bed, watching So You Think You Can Dance. Valerie downloaded an entire season and forced me to watch a bunch of episodes, insisting I need to try out for the show. I declined yet again. Easton announces we're leaving, then stands there rolling his eyes, while I hug Valerie goodbye and tell her she'd better find me at school on Monday. Outside, I realize Gideon and the twins already left in one of the Range Rovers, which means I'm stuck riding back with Easton and Reed. Reed gets behind the wheel, his brother slides in the passenger seat, and I sit in the back while they carry on a whole conversation like I'm not even there. We're gonna crush Wyatt Prep, Easton is saying. Half their O-line graduated last year, so it's pretty much a straight path to Donovan. Reed grunts in agreement. Then we're looking at Devlin High. Easy fucking peasy. Their QB's hung over half the time, and that Butterfingers receiver core of theirs is a joke. Easton babbles away, his voice animated, his shoulders free of the tension I'm used to seeing. Either he's drunk, or he's finally starting to accept my presence in his life. I try to join the conversation. What positions do you guys play? Just like that, his shoulders are stiff again. Linebacker, Reed says without turning around. Defensive end, Easton mutters. They go back to ignoring me. Easton is now telling his brother about the blowjob he got tonight. It's like she's only giving 40% now, he gripes. Used to be a solid 100, you know? Going to town on my dick like it's made of chocolate. And suddenly, it's a few licks and then let's cuddle? F that. Reed snickers. She thinks she's your girlfriend. Girlfriends don't need to put in an effort. Yeah, might be time to cut that one loose. You guys are pigs, I say from the back seat. Easton twists around, his blue eyes mocking me. Well, aren't we all high and mighty, Miss Sex Worker? I grit my teeth. I'm not a sex worker. Hmm. He turns back in his seat. I'm not. A helpless feeling lodges in my throat. You know what? Screw you both. You don't know me. We know everything we need to know. Reed says. You know shit. I bite my lip and focus my gaze out the window. We're only about halfway to the royal mansion when Reed abruptly stops the car on the side of the road. I meet his eyes in the rearview mirror, but his face has zero expression, as he snaps, last stop, get out. Shock smacks into me. What? East and I have somewhere else to be. We're going that way. He points to the left. The house is that way. He points straight ahead. Time for you to start walking. But it's only 2 miles, you'll be fine. He seems to be enjoying himself. Easton is already out of the car and opening the back door for me. Get a move on, sis. We don't want to be late. I'm a tad dazed as he yanks me out of the car and pushes me toward the side of the road. Are they seriously ditching me here? It's 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's dark. Neither of them care. Easton hops in the passenger seat, slams the door, and gives me a little wave. The SUV zooms forward, and Reed makes a speedy left turn, leaving me in his dust. I can hear their laughter from the open window. I don't cry. I just start walking. Chapter 10. I eat breakfast in the kitchen alone the next morning. My legs ache, and my feet are sore from walking 2 miles in new shoes that hadn't been broken in yet. I dreamed that Reed Royal was chasing me in a pitch-black tunnel, his deep voice taunting me in the darkness, his breath hot on my neck. I woke up before he was able to catch me, but I like to think that when he did, I strangled him to death. I'm not looking forward to school on Monday, and that $10,000 in my backpack is calling out to me. Leave. Run. Start over. But there's so much more money on the line. Maybe the royals are right. Maybe I am a whore. I might not be sleeping with anyone for money, but I am taking it from Callum for favors unspecified in the future. Brooke said he saved her, but I'm guessing from the way they act around each other that she's definitely sleeping with him. Footsteps thud in the hall, and Easton walks into the kitchen. He's bare-chested and wearing gray sweatpants that ride low on his hips. I try not to stare at the hard ridges of his abs, but I do take a long look at the cut on his right temple. It must have bled at some point, but now it's just a red line, an inch long, and marring his perfect skin. Without acknowledging me, he grabs some orange juice from the fridge and drinks straight from the carton. Note to self, don't drink from that carton unless you want oral herpes. I focus on eating my yogurt and pretend he's not here. I have no idea where he and Reed went last night or when they got home, and I'm not sure I want to know. I can feel him watching me. When I turn my head, I find him leaning against the counter. His blue-eyed gaze tracks the movement of my spoon as I raise it to my lips, then lowers to the hem of my short sleep shirt. See something you like? I crack as I take another bite. Not really. I roll my eyes and gesture to his head with my spoon. So what happened? Bump your head on the dashboard when you were blowing your brother last night? He laughs, then glances at the doorway behind me. Hear that, Reed? Our new sister thinks I blew you last night. Reed enters the kitchen, also shirtless and in sweatpants. He doesn't even look my way. See if she'll give you some pointers. She looks like she knows her way around Dick. I flip up my middle finger, but he has his back turned to me. Easton sees it, though, and a slow grin stretches his mouth. Nice. I like a chick with a little fight in her, he drawls. He pushes off the counter and comes closer, his thumbs tucked in his waistband. What do you say, Ella? He voices my name as if it's a curse word. Want to show us what you've got? My heart stops. I don't like the feral look in his eyes. He stands in front of me. Then his smile widens, and he slides one hand inside his pants to cup his junk. You're our sister now, right? So come on. He rubs himself. Help a brother out. I can't breathe. I'm scared. I shoot a glance at Reed, but he's leaning against the counter now, arms crossed. He looks amused. Easton's blue eyes go smoky. What's the matter, sis? Cat got your tongue? It's impossible to answer. My eyes dart toward the doorway that leads upstairs. The other door is behind me. But I don't want to turn my back to Easton if I need to run for help. He catches the fear in my eyes and starts to laugh. Just like that, his hand slides out of his pants. Aw, look at that, Reed. She's scared of us. Thinks we're gonna hurt her. Reed laughs, too. From his perch on the counter, he smirks at me. Not our M.O. We have no problem getting laid. Sexual assault isn't about getting laid. It's about power, I want to say. But I can see now that I was afraid for nothing. They don't need to hurt me. They already have power. This, whatever this was, it was intimidation, a game. They wanted to make me uncomfortable, and they succeeded. As our gazes lock in a three-way stare-down, Callum walks into the room. He frowns when he notices Easton standing so close to me and his other son lurking at the counter. Is everything all right? The royal brothers watch me, waiting for me to tattle on them. I don't. Everything's awesome. I take another bite of yogurt, but my appetite is gone. Your sons and I are just getting to know each other. Did you know they have a stellar sense of humor? Easton's lips twitch. When his dad turns away, Easton's palm grazes his crotch again. Did you enjoy the party last night? Callum asks. Reed cocks an eyebrow at me, waiting again. This time to see if I'll tell their father about the way they deserted me on the side of the road. I keep that to myself, too. It was great, I lie. Super fun. Callum joins me at the table, trying to provide a buffer between me and the guys, but his attention only draws sneers from Reed and Easton, who make no effort to hide their feelings.
What would you like to do this weekend?
I'm fine. You don't have to entertain me, I answer. He swivels in his chair. With an upward tip of his chin, he asks,
What about you two?
The subtext is, What are we going to do with Ella? It makes me cringe, and a tightness that I'm beginning to call the royal pain appears between my shoulder blades.
We got plans,
Reed mutters, and walks out of the room before Callum can even open his mouth again. He turns to Easton, who raises both palms and blinks innocently.
Don't ask me. I'm the middle child. I do what everyone else tells me.
Callum rolls his eyes, and despite the tension, I snort softly into my bowl. Easton does what Easton wants. No one made him put his hand down his pants and proposition me. That's a game he enjoyed playing, and one he did without prompting. It's convenient for him to pretend like Reed is his leader, absolving Easton of responsibility.
Well, maybe you can let me know what Reed's plans are for you later, Callum grinds out.
Easton flushes. It's one thing for him to cast Reed as a leader, and another thing for their father to imply Easton's a puppet.
You never cared what I did on the weekends before.
He shoves the OJ carton back into the fridge. With a glare at his father that is hot enough to turn the hair on Callum's head entirely gray, he walks off as well. Callum sighs.
I'm not winning any Father of the Year awards, am I?
I tap my spoon against the table a few times, because I know better than to stick my nose where it doesn't belong. But in this case, Callum is dragging me right into the middle of a messed up dynamic, and the collateral damage could get real bad if he doesn't rein it in.
Look, don't take this the wrong way, Callum, and obviously you know your kids better than I do, but does it really make sense shoving me down their throats?
Honestly, I'd rather they ignored me. It doesn't hurt my feelings that they aren't happy I'm here. And the house is big enough we could all go for days and not see each other. He scrutinizes me as if he's trying to figure out if I'm being sincere. Finally, he smiles sheepishly.
You're right. It wasn't always like this. We used to get along fine. But ever since their mother's death, the whole family hasn't been right. Unfortunately, these boys are spoiled. They need a dose of real life.
And I'm that dose? I scowl. I'm not an after-school lesson, and you know what? I've experienced real life and it sucks. I wouldn't force real life on the people I love the most. I try to protect them from that. I push away from the table and leave him behind. Outside the kitchen, I find Reed lurking in the hall. Waiting for me. I'm not even remotely sorry for the snide edge that's crept into my voice. Reed gives me the once-over, his gorgeous blue eyes lingering on my bare legs.
Just wondering what your game is.
I'm trying to survive, I tell him honestly. All I want to do is to make it to college.
And take a chunk of royal money with you?
I bristle. This guy just won't let up. Maybe with a few royal hearts in my pocket, too, I say sweetly. And then, with a forced boldness, I lift a finger and trail it slowly across his naked pecs, my nail scraping across his smooth skin. His breath hitches, almost imperceptibly, but it's there. My heart leaps to my throat, and blood begins to pound in places that I absolutely do not want to be associated with Reed Royal.
You're playing a dangerous game, he rasps out.
Don't I know it. Still, I can't let Reed see he's gotten to me. I pull my hand away, folding the fingers into a fist.
I don't know any other way to play it.
That bit of truth stuns him, and I slip away. I'd like to think I won that round, but I feel like every encounter with Reed chips away at something vital inside me. I spend the day exploring the house and the grounds. Beside the pool is a pool house made almost entirely of glass, which holds a sofa, some chairs, and a tiny kitchen. A stairway leads to the shore, but with all the rocks, there really isn't anything you could call a beach. At least not unless you walk farther down the shoreline.
Still, it's beautiful. And I can see myself sitting down here with a book and a mug of hot cocoa. It's hard to believe this is my life now. If all I have to do is endure 2 years of insults from the royal boys, it'll still be a cakewalk compared to everything I've gone through in the past. No worrying about having enough to eat, or wondering where I'm going to sleep. No moving from town to town, looking for a quick score. No sitting by my mom's bedside, watching her shake and cry from pain, but being too poor to afford the medication that would put her out of her misery. A sharp bolt of grief slices through me at those memories. Like Callum, Mom wasn't the best parent in the world, but she tried hard, and I loved her. When she was alive, I wasn't completely alone. Here, with the big, endless ocean rolling away from me, and not another person as far as I can see, the solitude hits me hard. No matter what Callum says or tries to do, I'm never going to be a royal. Maybe I'll do my reading inside. The big house is quiet. The guys are gone. Callum has left a note that says he's working and provides me with the Wi-Fi password, his cell phone number, and Duran's number. Under the piece of paper is a small white box. Cue heavy breathing. I lift out the smartphone like it's made of sugared crystals. My old phones were disposable flip phones that sent and received calls. This one, I feel like I could hack a database with it. I spend the rest of the afternoon playing with the phone, looking up random shit, and watching really terrible YouTube videos. It's wonderful. Around 7, Callum calls to tell me that dinner is ready. I find him and Brooke out on the patio.
"Mind if we eat out here?"
he asks. I stare at the delicious-looking food and the beautifully lit patio area. And try not to roll my eyes, because who in their right mind would hate this? It's perfect. During dinner, I get a chance to see a different side of Brooke. A strange, vulnerable one, where she ducks her head and bats her eyelashes at Callum. And Callum, the man who heads up a corporation that builds planes for the military, he eats it up like candy.
"Can I get you more wine, honey?"
Brooke offers. Callum's glass is almost overflowing already.
"No, I'm perfect."
He smiles easily.
"I've got the two most beautiful ladies sitting down to dinner with me. The steak is cooked perfectly, and I just closed a deal with Singapore Air."
Brooke clasps her hands together.
"You are just amazing. Have I told you how amazing you are?"
She leans close, her breast squashing against his arm, and plants a wet kiss against his cheek. He casts a quick glance in my direction, before gently moving away. Brooke makes a small noise of disappointment, but settles into her chair. I dig into my steak. I don't know if I've ever had a piece of meat so juicy before.
"Steak is very fattening. All red meat is," Brooke informs me.
"Ella doesn't need to worry about that,"
Callum says brusquely.
"Not now, but later you'll regret it,"
Brooke warns. I look down at the succulent piece of meat and then over at Brooke's willowy frame. I think I get where she's coming from. Like me, she's poor. She relies on Callum's generosity and probably fears that if she's less beautiful tomorrow, he'll be done with her. I don't know if she's wrong or right, but it doesn't make her concerns less valid. Still, I'm hungry, and I want this steak.
"Thanks for your input."
Callum smothers a chuckle as Brooke frowns. An expression I can't make out flits across her face. Something like disappointment or disapproval. Her pouty lips firm, and she turns to Callum, engaging him in conversation about some party they went to before I arrived. Guilt makes my next bite of meat a little less delicious than the first one. I hurt her feelings, and now she's shutting me out. Other than Valerie, she was the one friendly face around this new place, and now I've offended her.
"Should we plan a party to welcome Ella into the family?"
Callum suggests, trying to include me in the conversation. And Callum, he's been nothing but perfect since he dragged me out of Daddy G's. But a party with the assholes from school?
I'd rather have my fingernails pulled out one by one. I place my fork beside my plate. I don't need a party. You've already given me everything I need. Brooke lays her head against Callum's stiff shoulder.
Callum, don't worry about it. Ella will make friends in her own time, won't you, darling?
I nod in agreement. That's right. I summon up my best smile, and it must work, because the tension in his body disappears.
All right, then. No party.
Callum's the best, isn't he?
Brooke reaches up to toy with the top button of his shirt. Her actions are possessive, almost as if she's trying to defend her territory. I want to tell her I'm not a threat, but I don't know if she'd believe me.
We're his soiled doves. Hopefully, when we're cleaned up, he doesn't send us away.
No one's sending Ella away. She's a royal, Callum declares.
My gaze shifts to Brooke, and by the tight expression on her face, she doesn't miss that her name wasn't included in his pronouncement.
Really? I thought she was Steve's daughter. Is there something you're not telling us?
Brooke trills. He rears back as if she hit him.
What? No, of course she's Steve's, but he's...
Callum swallows hard.
He's gone, and so Ella is part of my family now, just as the boys would have been Steve's if anything had happened to me.
Of course. I didn't mean anything other than you're generous.
Her voice drops to a purr.
So very generous.
With each word, she moves closer and closer to Callum, until she's virtually on his lap. He switches his fork to his left hand, and drapes an arm around the back of Brooke's chair. His eyes plead with me to understand.
I'm using her just as she's using me.
I get it, I really do. This is a man who lost his wife and best friend in a short span of time. I know what loss feels like. And if Brooke fills up those empty spaces for Callum, then good for him. But I don't need to watch them in action.
I'm going inside to get a...
I don't even bother finishing because Brooke has climbed on top of Callum. I watch, wide-eyed, as she straddles him, pulling on his ears like he's a hobby horse.
Not here, Brooke.
His eyes flicker toward me. I start walking, quickly, toward the kitchen. Behind me, I hear her reassure Callum.
She's 17, darling. She probably knows more about sex than the two of us put together. And if she doesn't, your boys will expose her innocent eyes soon enough.
That makes me cringe, but whatever spell Brooke has cooked up is doing its thing, because I hear Callum groan.
Wait. Wait, Brooke.
She giggles breathily, and then Callum's chair starts squeaking. Damn, this is a big patio. Easton is coming out of the kitchen as I make my escape inside. He peers past me, totally unfazed by what's happening on the patio.
Welcome to the royal palace, he says.
An impish grin spreads across his face, and he yells,
Don't forget to wrap it before you tap it. We don't need more money-grubbing illegitimate kids in this family.
My smile dies off immediately. Did someone teach you how to be a jerk, or does it come naturally? Easton hesitates for a moment, but then, as if Reed is sitting on his shoulder, he drops his hand to his crotch.
Why don't you come upstairs, and I'll show you just how good I am in my natural state.
Pass. I walk by as calmly as possible, and I don't start running until I hit the stairs. Once I'm in the privacy of my bedroom, I list all the reasons why I shouldn't leave immediately. I remind myself that I'm not hungry. I have 10 grand in my backpack. I'm not stripping for greedy men with dollar bills clutched in their sweaty hands. I can handle 2 years of sexual come-ons and personal put-downs from the royal boys. But for the rest of the night, I stay in my room, where I spend the time looking for part-time jobs, using the shiny new MacBook that magically appeared on my desk. There's no public transport outside the house, but I passed a bus stop last night that wasn't too far away, maybe a quarter of a mile. The next day, I make the walk, and according to my watch, it takes 10 minutes at a brisk pace, which is more than a half mile. The Sunday bus schedule is snoozy. Only one every hour and it stops at 6. Whatever job I get would need to be over early on Sundays. On my way home, Gideon drives by in a shiny SUV. His hair is sticking up, and he's got red marks on his neck. If it were anyone else, I'd say he just had sex. But he looks too angry for that. Maybe he fought with a raccoon.
What are you doing?
He barks. Walking.
Get in.
He stops and shoves open the door.
You shouldn't be out here alone.
Seems like a nice place. The houses are big, the lawns are bigger. Besides, his brothers had no problem ditching me on this road the other night. The most danger I've encountered this morning is a big bad man trying to lure me into his truck. Good thing I know better. A reluctant smile lurks on the corner of his mouth.
I don't have any candy or ice cream, so by default I should be considered safe.
Nah, just a shitty kidnapper.
You coming or are we going to block the Sunday traffic all day?
I glance behind him and see another car coming. Why the hell not? It's a short trip to the house. Gideon doesn't say anything during the drive, only rubs his arm a couple of times. A few minutes later, he stops in front of the entrance and puts the car in park. Thanks for the ride, Gideon. When he doesn't follow me inside, I glance over and call out to the SUV. Not coming? He looks up at the house.
No, I need a swim. A long one.
Then he rubs his arm again, like there's dirt on it that he simply can't get off. He catches me watching him, and frowns. I want to ask if there's anything wrong, but the no trespassing look that shudders over his face makes me swallow back the words. I give him a worried look instead. An invitation. I've seen shit. I try to telegraph. I only get a clenched jaw. In return. On my bed is another note from Callum. I climb onto the cloud of pink and white and curl up next to the headboard to read.
Sorry about last night's dinner. Won't happen again. Durand will drive you to school in the morning. Let him know the time. P.S. Your car is coming. Wanted to get exactly the right one, and the only one with the correct color was in California.
Oh God, please don't let it be pink. I think I'll die if I'm supposed to drive Malibu Barbie's dream car. I bolt upright from the bed. I can't believe those words even passed through my head. A car is a car. I should be grateful just to be driving one. Who cares what color it is? If it's pink, I'll get down and kiss the bubblegum-colored fender. Jeez. One weekend, and I'm already turning into a spoiled brat. Chapter 11. The next morning, I'm up at dawn. I'm not going to repeat my mistakes from the party. I push aside all the pretty shoes that Brooke bought and find some white canvas sneakers. I pair them with skinny jeans and a t-shirt. I nibble on my lip. Do I leave the backpack here or take it with me? If I take it with me, some punk-ass kid might steal it. If I leave it, one of the royals might go through it. I decide to take it with me, although carrying around 10 large makes me feel paranoid and jumpy. I run into Callum in the kitchen. He's leaving for work, and he's surprised to find me up so early. I lie and tell him I'm meeting Valerie for breakfast, and he looks so excited I made a friend that I think he's going to pee his pants. After chugging down a cup of coffee, I meet Durand outside the house 2 hours before school starts. Thanks for agreeing to drive me. He merely gives a dip of his head. I have him drop me off at a bakery that's just minutes away from the prep school, and the moment I step inside, I'm greeted by the most heavenly smell. Behind the counter is a woman about my mom's age, with wheat blonde hair swept up in a tight ballet-style bun. Hi there, sweetie, what can I get for you? She asks with her hands poised over the register. I'm Ella Harper, and I'd like to apply for the assistant job. The ad said there were school-friendly hours. I go to Astor Park. A scholarship student? I don't correct her because it's mostly true. I'm a Callum Royal scholarship beneficiary. I hold my breath as she inspects me. Do you have any experience baking?
None, I admit. But I'll work harder than anyone you've ever hired. I don't mind long days or early mornings or late nights.
She purses her lips. I'm not a fan of hiring high school students, but we could give it a try, say a week. You'll have to serve your peers, will that be a problem?
Absolutely not. Some of those Astor Park kids can be a real handful.
Translation, the school is full of assholes.
Again, the clientele is not a problem for me. She sighs. All right, I really do need another hand. If you show up for the next 6 days on time and work all your scheduled hours, the job is yours. I flash her a smile, and she slaps a hand to her heart.
Honey, you should have smiled before. It completely transforms your face. In fact, the more you smile, the more tips you'll get. Remember that.
Smiling is not my natural state. In fact, it kind of hurts. My face is so unused to it, but I keep smiling because I want this nice lady to like me.
I start baking at 4, but I won't expect you until 5:30. I'll need you every morning during the week. You'll work until classes start. And on Thursdays and Fridays, you'll need to come back after school and work until close, which is 8 p.m. Will that interfere with any after-school activities?
Nope. Not even Friday? I'm more interested in this job than anything the school has going on Friday nights. She gives me another smile. All right. Pick out a scone then, and I'll make you up a coffee. My name is Lucy, by the way, and the rush starts in about an hour. You might change your mind after you see what a madhouse this can be. Lucy is right. The bakery is jam-packed, but I don't mind the rush. Bustling behind the counter and serving baked goods for 2 hours distracts me from worrying about what will happen when I get to school. I feel weird wearing a uniform, but I'm sure I'll get used to it soon. I notice the other girls at school have found ways to sexy up their attire. Like Savannah said, skirt lengths have been altered, and a lot of the girls leave nearly half their shirt buttons undone, so you can see the lacy tops of their bras. I'm not interested in drawing attention to myself, so my hem stays at my knee, and my shirt stays buttoned almost to the collar. I have pre-calc, entrepreneurial studies, and English in the morning. Valerie isn't in any of those classes, but Savannah is in all three, and Easton is in the English class, but he sits in the back of the room with his buddies and doesn't say a word to me. I don't care. I kind of hope he ignores me all semester. Being ignored seems to be the theme of the day. Nobody says a word to me, except my teachers, and after making several attempts at smiling at kids in the hallway and getting no response, I eventually give up and pretend they don't exist either. It isn't until lunch that I finally see a familiar face.
Harper, get your butt over here.
Valerie waves me over from the salad bar in the cafeteria. Actually, cafeteria might not be the right word to describe this cavernous room. The walls are wood-paneled, the chairs are leather-upholstered, and the food area looks like the buffet setup of a luxury hotel. At the far end of the room are endless sets of French doors, all open and spilling onto an outdoor eating area for students who want to sit outside when the weather's nice. It's not even the end of September, so the sun is shining, and I suppose we could sit outside, but I spot Jordan Carrington and her friends out there, as well as Reed and Easton, and opt to stay inside. Valerie and I load our trays with food and find an empty table in the corner of the room. I glance around, realizing that all the students look older. No freshmen? I ask. She shakes her head. Their lunch is an hour earlier.
Gotcha.
I stick my fork in my pasta and keep looking around. Nobody meets my eyes. It's like Valerie and I don't exist.
Get used to your cloak of invisibility, Valerie says knowingly.
Actually, you should wear it like a badge of honor. That just means the rich bitches don't care enough to torment you.
What's their idea of torment?
The usual. Spray painting rude shit on your locker, tripping you in the hall, trashing you online. Jordan and her minions aren't very creative.
So she's the female equivalent of Reed, huh?
Yepers. And if it were up to her, she'd be on his arm every day and screwing him every night. But alas,
My poor cousin can't seem to land her man.
I snicker. How is it you know everything about everyone?
Valerie shrugs.
I watch. I listen. I remember.
All right, then tell me more about the royals. I feel awkward asking, but after all my run-ins with the royal brothers, I've come to the conclusion that I need to arm myself with ammo against them. My new friend groans.
Oh, no, don't tell me you've got the hots for one of them already.
Ew, never. I force myself not to think about the way my heart pounds whenever Reed Royal enters a room. I'm not crushing on the guy, dammit. He's an asshole, and I want nothing to do with him. I just want to know what I'm up against.
She relaxes.
Okay. Well, I already told you about Easton and Claire. One twin has a girlfriend, the other is a slut like his big brothers. Reed, I'm not sure about. Half the chicks in this school claim to have slept with him, but who knows if that's true. Only one I know about for sure is Jordan's friend, Abby. Trust me, my cousin wasn't happy about that hookup.
What else? Scandals? Rumors? I feel like a detective questioning a suspect.
Their dad has a trashy girlfriend. I think that's been going on for a couple years.
The memory of Callum and Brooke's dinner shenanigans flashes in my mind. I know all about the girlfriend. I say with a sigh.
Okay, what else? Their mom died a while ago.
Valerie lowers her voice.
From an overdose.
My breath hitches.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was all over the news and in all the papers. I guess she'd been prescribed sleeping pills or something, but it interfered with some other medication she was taking. I don't really know the details, but I think her doctor was under investigation for screwing up the prescription.
Despite myself, my heart aches for the royals. There are pictures of their mom on the fireplace mantle in the living room. She was a pretty brunette with kind-looking eyes. Every time Callum mentions her in passing, grief fills his eyes, which tells me he must have truly loved her. I wonder if she was close to her sons, and I suddenly feel really bad for Reed and his brothers. Nobody should ever have to lose their mom. Since I've tapped out Valerie's royal knowledge, we change the subject, and I tell her about my new job. She promises to come by after school twice a week to annoy me. And we spend the rest of the lunch period laughing and getting to know each other more. By the time we drop off our trays, I've decided I'm definitely keeping her as a friend.
I can't believe we have zero classes together, she complains as we leave the cafeteria.
What the hell, girl? Who forced you to sign up for all those math and science and business classes? You should be taking life skills with me.
We're learning to apply for credit cards.
I chose them. I'm here to learn, not waste time. Nerd.
Brat.
We part ways outside my chemistry class. We already exchanged numbers at lunch, and she promises to text me later, then flounces off. When I enter the chem lab, the teacher rises from his desk as if he's been waiting for me. He's hobbit-sized, with a bushy beard that looks like it's trying to devour his face. He introduces himself as Mr. Neville. I try not to look at the other students, but my gaze has already picked out Easton at one of the tables. He's the only student without anyone sitting beside him. Shit, that's not good.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Ella, Mr. Neville says. I peeked at your transcript earlier and was impressed by your previous science grades.
I shrug. Math and science come easy for me. I know I got my talent for dance from my mother. But since she could barely calculate a tip percentage in her head when we went out to eat, I always wondered if I got my aptitude for numbers from my father. Steve, the Navy SEAL slash pilot slash multimillionaire.
Anyway, Mr. Royal contacted the headmaster this weekend and requested we pair you up with Easton this semester.
Neville lowers his voice.
Easton could learn some discipline, and it makes sense for you two to be lab partners. You'll be able to study together at home.
Oh, joy. I stifle a sigh and head for Easton's table, where I drop my backpack under the desk and slip into the chair next to his. He doesn't look happy to see me.
Fucking hell, he mutters. Hey, don't look at me.
I mutter back. This was your father's idea. He stares straight ahead, a muscle ticking in his jaw.
Of course it was.
Unlike my morning classes, chemistry seems to drag on forever. But that's probably because Easton sits there scowling at me for 99% of the time. For the other 1% of it, I get a cocky grin from him as he leans back in his chair and orders me to mix the solution we need to grow the crystals. The second the bell rings, I'm out of my chair and eager to escape my sulking brother. I race out of the classroom, ready to get to my next class, but then I remember I need to make a quick stop at my locker to grab my textbook. All the courses I'm taking are advanced and come with 1,000-page texts. I wasn't able to fit them all in my backpack. Fortunately, my locker is nearby, and so is the World History classroom. Unfortunately, Jordan Carrington and her friends round the corner before I can reach my locker. The four of them stop and smirk when they notice me. None of them say hello. Whatever, I don't say hello either, and I try not to feel self-conscious as I walk past them. They might be bitches, but they're beautiful bitches. Every guy in the hallway is checking them out, including Easton, who lazily strides out of chem class and walks over to the girls. The group stops by the locker bank, and Jordan whispers something in Easton's ear, her manicured nails resting on his upper arm. He shrugs, causing his navy blue blazer to tighten across his broad shoulders. He's undeniably the hottest guy in a 5-mile radius, though the two guys who join him aren't hard to look at either. I ignore them all as I reach my locker and spin the combination lock. 2 more classes and then school will be over and the stairs will stop. I'll go back to the mansion and do my homework, then go to sleep. Keep myself busy and block out the bullshit. That's my new motto, and I'm sticking to it. I'm relieved when the lock clicks on the first try. I wasn't sure I got the combination, but the locker door opens easily and a mountain of garbage falls out. I'm so startled I squeak out loud, then curse myself for it. Laughter rings out behind me, and I close my eyes, willing the heat in my cheeks to subside. I don't want them to see me blushing. I don't want them to know that this stinking, heaping mess of trash at my feet has affected me in any way. I kick a stray banana peel and breathe through my mouth, so the stench of rotting food doesn't make my eyes water. The floor is littered with even more disgusting items than the spoiled produce. Used napkins, tissues, a bloody tampon. I will not cry. The laughter doesn't die down. I ignore it. I just scoop up the World History textbook from the bottom shelf of my luxury-sized locker. Then I flick away the wad of crumbled newspapers that's sticking to the latch and slam the door shut. When I turn around, all eyes are on me. I only seek out one pair, Jordan's almond brown and gleaming evilly. She gives me a regal little wave. I square my shoulders and tuck my book under my arm. A tall guy with brown curls snickers as I start to walk. Oh my God. There's a sanitary pad stuck to my shoe. I swallow my embarrassment, kick the pad away, and keep walking. Easton wears a bored expression as I approach. I pause in front of Jordan, one eyebrow arched, my own smirk forming on my lips. Is that all you've got, Carrington? I'm trash. Tisk tisk, I'm disappointed in your lack of creativity. Her eyes flash, but I'm already sauntering past her, like I have no care in the world. Another score for the away team. Kind of. Because I'm the only one who knows just how close I am to bursting into tears. Chapter 12. I make it through the rest of the day without crying, but part of me wants to go all carry on these kids until they look back at trash in the locker as the easiest day of their lives. Valerie texts me during class. Are you okay? Heard about locker. Jordan is an ass. I'm fine, I respond, It was stupid, and like you said, no creativity. Trash? Did she steal that from a Disney show?